We'll call the Senate Judiciary to order today. The 15th of March. We've been talking about kissing the Blarney Stone today, so. We have Senator Kelly, Senator Meyer.
Hello.
Senator Costello. Costello. I'm sorry. And Senator Wilkowski. So today, we only have one bill that we're going to hear today. Senate Bill 55, which we were going to hear at one point, is caught up into a drafting issue, and we'll bring that before us Monday. And I think it has a lot to do with how many amendments are going on in the other body. Today we have Senate Bill 69, which is misconduct involving weapons in a fifth degree. Senator Egan is the sponsor. And so, Senator Egan, why don't you come? And the idea that I had today, and yes, bring your staff with you, is to go ahead and bring the bill before us, get people familiar with the concepts in it, the actual language, and then maybe some public testimony and some questions, and then we'll set the bill aside. Because as I've studied it, I've kind of percolated up some questions, but you may have the answers for. So come on with you and your staff and put yourself on the record and introduce the bill to us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. I introduce Senate Bill 69 by the request of law enforcement. You have some police officers here in the room today who will tell you that the bill is about officer safety. Right now, Alaska law says if I'm carrying a firearm concealed and a police officer contacts me, I need to mention the gun. But if I have it concealed in my truck, I don't have to tell an officer who pulls me over. That's the only thing this bill changes. It copies exactly the same language we have for a firearm in a shoulder holster and applies to a gun under the seat or in the driver's center console. Mr. Chairman, I put some statistics in the bill packet. They're just to illustrate how dangerous traffic stops can be for our police and our troopers. The bill does not change who can exercise the constitutional right to carry a firearm, or when, or where. And that's important to me. Senate Bill 69 just lets police know when a firearm is part of the equation, so they can keep themselves safe. 99% of the time, that would be to say just thanks. Please just don't reach under your seat if you drop your registration. Or, okay, great. I need you to leave the center console closed while I have you stop today. Pretty simple. No surprises. In the unusual event that a stop turns into something else, everyone is safer if nobody gets surprised by the sudden appearance of a potentially lethal force. And Jesse Keel, my longtime staffer, and I are happy to answer any questions. And again, members of the committee and Mr. Chair, thank you very much for hearing this.
Thank you very much. The operative language is on page 2, starting from line 24, which just gives you the specifics. So is there any questions at this point for the sponsor on the structure or his description of the bill? So there are a few questions that percolate up in my mind, but what I thought I'd do is I have at least, I know Quinlan Steiner said that he would like to testify as public defender. I have Jeff Laughlin with the Alaska State Troopers for questions on the line. So did you have anybody here specifically that you want to testify? So did we have the sign-up list? I'm going to get that sign-up list. Let's go ahead and get a couple testimony, but if you'll stay put for just a little bit, because there's a couple of questions that I'd like to ask, and maybe you could answer them. If not, we'll go searching for the answers.
Thanks.
Go ahead and excuse yourself, and we'll get some public testimony on it. There's we'll get public testimony, and then I would like to drill down into a couple of the questions. Quinlan, since you're online, and I think I do have one person in the room to testify. He's getting it up right now. Let's go. Okay, James Dooley. He's been sitting here patiently waiting, right? So, come on in. Appreciate you coming to testify in front of the committee, and put yourself on the record if there's any affiliation, and then your testimony, and then we'll go to work on this bill. Thank you.
Sir, so my name is James Dooley. I am testifying today in a personal capacity, though my testimony is certainly informed by my profession. I'm a police officer with the Juneau Police Department. Mm.
Thank you for that. Thank you for your work as a police officer. Please give us your testimony.
Yes, sir. As I said, I'm a professional in law enforcement. My career began at the United States Coast Guard Academy, where I attended and received a Bachelor of Science degree, including studies in law enforcement. I deployed with them as a federal law enforcement officer, serving in the Eastern Pacific, other places, and most recently in Alaska. After my Coast Guard service, I joined the Juneau Police Department, where I work as a patrol officer. I hold a master's degree of criminal justice from Boston University and an advanced police certificate from the Alaska Police Standards Council. I'm a gun guy. I'm an expert shot. I have shot personally for sport, recreation. I like to hunt. Go place in the wilderness where it makes sense to have a firearm for wildlife protection. And I'm not anti-gun in any way, but I was asked to speak by an officer who I respect very much because I had an experience where a firearm was suddenly introduced to a situation, and he asked me to speak about that. That situation occurred, it actually wasn't inside of a vehicle, it was inside of a residence, where another officer and I had gone to check on a guy who called a welfare check, and a gentleman had been reported to be drunk, high, have access to a firearm, and had been threatening suicide. So we went to check on him and see if there's any way we could help. He began talking to us at the door, allowed us to come inside with him. My partner was first through the door. I was behind him, and so it was kind of my responsibility to look around the room, try to spot any of those firearms that we'd been told about as a safety concern. As I was doing that, I heard the gentleman say, "Don't shoot me," and then a very loud click. By the time I looked at him, I saw that he'd produced a 1911 pistol from behind his back. And the muzzle was traversing my partner and I. So I made the decision that I needed to pull my own weapon in order to defend myself and my partner. I did so, as did my partner. You know, in that split second, literally split second, continued to see his muzzle traverse up towards his own head. And ultimately, I think that was his intent. My partner and I each got a hand on the gun. I put my own gun away and used two hands to strip the firearm from that gentleman, and we were able to safely get him and the firearm secured and make the situation safe. So, again, though that interaction didn't occur in a vehicle, I have numerous other experiences dealing with firearms in a vehicle, including when they do become known and kind of suddenly. And what I want to testify to and say is that I believe it makes for a much safer interaction for officers as well as for citizens, that when there is a situation where a firearm is involved, I believe it's safer if it's kind of predictable, if it's disclosed, and if that being surprise doesn't enter in. So that's what I wanted to testify to. I'm very happy to answer any questions or if there's other experiences I can share or help in any way. But I think this will make everybody safer.
Any questions? I have a question. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, officer. Is it, just in talking to people about this bill, I've heard from some people who have been pulled over by the police, and, mm-hmm. and they've told me that they have been asked if they have a gun. Is that common for police officers to do? Are you allowed? I guess I'm an attorney. I don't deal in this kind of law, but, and I know the laws have, well, not the laws, but the interpretation of Fourth Amendment has changed over the years a little bit. And broaden a little bit in police officers' favor, I think. But I guess, are you allowed to ask right now if people have a gun? And if they don't, are not honest with you? Is there a punishment for that?
Well, so I'm not a lawyer, but I guess I've, when I worked for the Coast Guard, it was part of our opening statement to, during every boarding, you know, without reaching for it or touching it, are there any weapons on the vessel? And even having said that, I've had a gentleman say, yeah, it's right here. You know, and all other factors of the circumstance and the contact, okay, nobody got shot, you know, safely removed it and explained, you know, but no, it's not a rote part of my practice. And again, I'm here as a private citizen. I can't speak for the department or policy, but no, it's not a rote part of every stop. I have asked. I have, you know, even when dealing with a gentleman who, upstanding citizen in all regards, as far as I know, in all appearances, but there's just something about him and his position in the vehicle and what he was wearing and just kind of a collection of things to where I asked, do you have a gun on you right now? Yeah, it's in this pocket. Okay, don't touch it. But even, you know, before the stop, it was for just a traffic violation was the reason for that contact. Even though I didn't have other, you know, criminal history information or indicators, just something, it seemed as if he had a gun on him, and I knew that he needed to disclose that. He admitted that he did. I removed it. I made sure that there wasn't some other concern involved, and then explained the law to him. That's so. As a personal practice, and I know that our officers, if you believe there's a gun that's not disclosed, you know, I think it does make sense to ask, and I think most prudent officers would. But no, in the work I do and the officers I work with, it's not a rote part of every stop.
Thank you.
So one of the things that the state troopers brought us to is one of the trainings they have on when to shoot and when not to shoot. Mm-hmm. And they go through a video series of various different encounters where you have a very split second to decide whether deadly force is going to be part of the question or not. And we were challenged to respond. And, of course, we, with very little training, responded improperly many times. And so it was an exercise that showed us how quickly deadly force then can be presented in a case where you're stopping somebody and whatever they're doing, you have to be suspicious. So I'm very cognizant of that after having gone through that. But I'm also very cognizant of the safety of the individual and the power of the state. There's always that balance on how do we then make sure that individuals aren't molested by the law while we still have law that is not receiving bad action. So the concealed carry law right now requires that we disclose. Tell me, in your perspective, has that worked pretty cordially? Are people responsive? Is it more intense than you think it should be? I think for law-abiding citizens who actually go through the process of getting one, we would expect that they would be cordial and compliant. But from your perspective, do you have any comment on that?
Senator, I guess I've kind of seen a variety of responses. In the best case scenarios, I can speak to, I had one this morning, a gentleman disclosed he had a firearm with him. It was not a tense situation. There was no adrenaline on either of our parts, I don't believe. But the circumstances were such that it was prudent for me to, in that circumstance, go ahead and secure it for the duration of our contact, and he got right back at the end. I've also had circumstances where people lied to me about having a firearm, and I've had experiences where later in the contact it made sense to detain them for reasons, and then found the weapon, as I testified to, I've had an experience where one was drawn on me and presented as if I was going to be shot. And so I've kind of had numerous circumstances. I will say that I wish more folks knew and abided by the prudence you know, just letting an officer know that they've got a gun. I think people have made honest mistakes about not disclosing those.
Yeah.
And so I think there's some amount of lack of awareness out there about the current law and responsibilities. But there are many prudent gun owners who do disclose them, and it adds nothing, adds no adrenaline to the contact, I guess I'll say.
Senator Costello has a question as well.
I also want to thank you for your service as a law enforcement member of the community. So when you brought up the incidents where the person was lying, I was curious if the bill were to pass and you determined that somebody was lying about perhaps the gun on their person, because of the bill, would you then go looking in the car for other guns? Or, you know, at what point would this bill, if it were to pass, change your behavior once you had contact with somebody in the community?
Senator, I'll try to understand the question. So essentially that if I were to contact somebody and they didn't disclose a firearm, and then I were to... Are you referring to firearm, like, in the vehicle or on their person?
Through the chair. On their person, you determined that they were lying, or you even thought that they might be lying, but you determined in one case they were lying. Would you then, as an officer, look further in the vehicle for other guns if this bill were to pass?
I'm not alert, but as far as a law enforcement officer, my understanding that, no, this wouldn't change my search authorities. This doesn't change the Constitution that... You know, I still certainly respect and would respect everybody's constitutional rights, and that wouldn't, you know, I don't see anything in this bill that would change where I would search or why. You know, everybody still has a strong privacy rights, especially in Alaska, and that's yeah. And that's great. And we
follow between those balances a lot. And so as we're discussing this bill, we're going to consider their rights, your right to be safe and enforce the law, their right to live peaceably without state molestation. But in an encounter, how do you engage, right? and it's probably true that many times those who will not disclose to you can be and may be the most dangerous. Next question.
Thank you. So currently, if a person has a gun, concealed carry, they have to disclose it to you. And my question is, And maybe it's not for you, so I apologize for that. So if a passenger has a concealed carry permit and has a gun, and the driver doesn't know about that, if this bill were to pass, would that passenger then, would you be then having a conversation with the passenger? Because under this law, it seems like the driver would have a Class B misdemeanor if, or could. I'm not sure how the specifics would work out. I see someone shaking their head no in the back, but I got to ask the question.
So the Department of Law is in the room. We have a public defender online. So I think on the legal nuances, this is where they would have to, that once this law is passed, then they would have to be made alert to those. But I think as an enforcement officer to try to interpret that at this point is asking him to delve into the philosophical discussion that we're in. So, but if it did pass, then law would instruct him how they're best to approach that. So under this circumstance, if you have a driver, maybe we could say, that is a concealed carry, and somebody who's also a concealed carry in a vehicle, what's your instruction at this point?
At this point, when contacted by the police, an individual who's carrying a concealed firearm, whether they have a permit or not, you know, the law is treats them the same in Alaska, and that's that they would just have to disclose it. You know, I myself, in as a private citizen, I've been contacted by the police, and I put my hands like this, and I say, "Officer, I have a concealed weapon, and this is where it is, and what would you like me to do?"
Having
read the text of this law, if this, you know, appeared in my officer's field manual, and now we're enforcing it, I think it doesn't change those who have a weapon on their person. And so it would be the responsibility of each of those people to just say, you know, if the driver and passenger each had a gun, they would, "Hey, officer, I want to let you know I've got a firearm on me." "Okay, thank you." And the passenger would also have that responsibility since they're being contacted by law enforcement. So that's my understanding.
I sure appreciate your testimony, and we're going to further discuss this because I'll give you an example. Searches and seizures in a domicile and a vehicle have wandered away from each other, but there's still an open question as to what that legal right of a search and seizure is. And we'll discuss that in light of this bill, I think. So thank you very much. Any other questions? Sure appreciate you taking the time on your own and coming out here to testify. And for your safety, we want to consider this. But it's also true we have to consider other factors. Thank you very much. I do have Quinlan Steinman who said yes, he would like to testify, so we'll start there, and then I'll ask the Alaska State Troopers, Jeff Laughlin, if he has any further input. But Quinlan, you're before the committee. Put yourself on the record and give us any testimony that you think we should have for our understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. And in reviewing this bill, it just raised a couple concerns that I thought I should bring to the committee's attention for your consideration. Primarily, this relates to essentially a lack of notice to the public that this affirmative duty exists. That creates a constitutional concern as well as a practical concern in effectuating this policy. The constitutional concern relates to the lack of notice itself. In general, the Constitution prohibits criminalizing a duty to act when there hasn't been notice. And in this case, there really is essentially no notice to the public that this duty exists. That is differentiated from the past when there was a concealed carry permit law that required permitting and required a class and had affirmative duties. So essentially that in itself is a constitutional question, though that constitutional question exists in the current statute as well. It's also raised by this particular amendment. It's just one that hasn't been litigated or apparently addressed by the appellate courts in the state. This also raises a Fifth Amendment question. If somebody's required to make a disclosure, which in and of itself might be the admission of a crime, there'd be a potential question there. Again, that a question exists with the statute and isn't raised specifically by this amendment, but it exists. The practical concern related to this notice is if the public doesn't know or if individuals don't know, otherwise law-abiding citizens will have inadvertently committed a crime, and that won't really effectuate the policy that's at issue here, which seems reasonable, which is to have the awareness of the existence of a weapon made known to ensure the safety of the situation. There are potential fixes that could be added to this bill that would address these issues. One would simply be to write into the statute that the officer would be required to ask the person whether or not they have a weapon in the vehicle and notify them of their obligation to disclose. Another option would be to write such requirements into driver's licensing obligations. And a third would be simply to make it a violation. The prohibition prohibit or requiring affirmative action isn't implicated in a violation. It's really implicated in criminal statutes. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about the analysis, but that was the issues that I wanted to raise before the committee.
The issue that I brought up earlier about if a policeman knocks at your door without a warrant but it has some probable cause to ask you, would they have, from a defendant's position, the right to ask if you have firearms in the house?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe there's any prohibition on simply asking the question. I think a police officer could ask the question any time, and individuals are free to answer that question as they see fit. The requirement in the statute that exists now with regard to concealed weapons on your person, does raise that issue about whether or not the failure to respond appropriately can be the subject of criminal liability.
So it's mostly within concealed carry and vehicles that we're dealing with at this point.
Correct. I mean, the statute that's being proposed, the amendment that's being proposed, mirrors something that exists presently in the statute.
Sure.
With regard to concealed on your person. This issue became apparent in reviewing this bill because of the way that concealed weapons laws have changed over time. They had originally, in the older criminal code, been a prohibition to carry concealed weapons. And then in 1994, there was a specific constitutional provision for the right to bear arms that was added to the Constitution. And at the same time, the legislature enacted a concealed weapons permit law that allowed concealed carry, but also required the disclosure of that weapon when interacting with a police officer. That was subsequently repealed. And it left open, as a result of the repeal of the concealed weapons permit law, kind of raised this question about whether or not the current statute is constitutional. But again, that just for sort of practical reasons, that doesn't appear to have been raised to the appellate courts of the state.
And with regard to the Fifth Amendment, you're talking about the right to not incriminate yourself?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. For example, if you were intoxicated in possession of the weapon and were required to disclose that, you'd essentially be admitting to committing a crime. Also, in a situation where you were a juvenile under a certain age and admitted and disclosed that you had a weapon, you would be admitting to a crime, and that would be compulsory under the statute. So that person would be able to contest that charge and that the investigation, how it went out or laid out, just on Fifth Amendment grounds.
There's another question from Senator Costello.
I don't want to interrupt your line.
I only had one more question on the defendant's side. Maybe if I could ask that, and then you can continue. If you were called upon to defend a police officer who got pretty much ambushed, as it happened in Fairbanks, what about their right to not only enforce the law, but to have a degree of safety from their perspective? Do they have a right to assert themselves in that safe manner as well?
Through the chair, are you referring to the requesting of somebody you interact with that they have a weapon?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's nothing wrong with that at all. I think the policy at issue here is an important one and makes sense. For a police officer to be aware that there's a weapon can change the nature of what occurs in any interaction between the police and the public. So I think the policy is a good one. It promotes public safety. The question is, how do you go about it so it actually does that? From that perspective, I think the notice requirement, letting people know that they're obligated to answer this question and allow the officer to secure the weapon, would promote that policy.
Thank you. Senator Costello has a question.
Good afternoon, Quinn. So my question is, could you give other examples of misconduct involving a weapon in the fifth degree?
Sure. There's the current statute that exists now that requires somebody who's carrying a deadly weapon concealed on the person to immediately inform and allow the peace officer to secure the weapon. That's the current statute. Fifth Amendment or misconduct of the weapons in the fifth degree also includes concealing a weapon on your person within somebody's residence without their express permission, possessing a loaded firearm at any place where intoxicating liquor is sold, being an unemancipated minor under the age of 16 possessing a firearm that's concealed on your person. Those are other examples of the same level of B misdemeanor misconduct.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski has a question as well, Quinlan.
Is there a prohibition now against police officers from asking if someone has a firearm in when they pull them over?
Through the chair, I'm not aware of any prohibition. I think there's nothing wrong with officers asking the question. I think it's done quite frequently.
You know, and I do have Jeff Laughlin from the State Troopers. They might have a policy issue that they might want to chime in on. So just as you ask your questions, maybe we'll get him to chime in as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Senator Wilkowski.
So if a police officer pulls someone over now and asks them if they have a firearm and they say under their seat and they say no, would that be punishable by anything if the person lied to the police officer?
Through the chair, I did not specifically research the question of whether or not lying to a police officer in the course of an investigation is a crime. I'd be reluctant to answer that question because I know in other realms, failure to cooperate can be an issue, but I don't specifically recall the answer to that question, so I could certainly look into it and get back to you.
Okay. And then,
Senator Wilkowski.
So there's a provision in here to allow a police officer to secure the firearm. Do you have any concerns over Fourth Amendment issues with that?
Through the chair, that is an issue that came to my attention that I've been looking into. I was discussing it, in fact, this morning. It does potentially present some issues if in the process of securing the weapon, you open up, say, a closed container or you open up the console and the officer at that point sees some contraband that may cause a further investigation. There would be potential constitutional claims there, but I didn't fully flesh out the analysis. So I think there would be certainly a legitimate argument that violated the Constitution. I really have no idea whether or not that was a successful argument or whether or not that's been addressed by courts in other jurisdictions. But it is something I intend to continue to look into.
Senator Wilkowski, to question further?
Yeah, just so two other points. And then I know there have been fights, cases that have gone forward over the years or how you define interior of the vehicle. In your reading of this, would that include the trunk? Let's say that's question number one. And question number two is the definition of when contacted by a peace officer. Is it your understanding that would mean a passenger as well?
Through the chair, on the first question, my recollection of how interior is defined, it would not include the trunk. It would include those areas that were reachable from the inside of the vehicle. And as it applies to a passenger, it arguably would be applicable to the passenger as well if they had entered a vehicle and placed their weapon under the seat or something. So that is certainly a possibility.
Senator Wilkowski.
But that's unclear from the statute.
And then I assume the standard would be a knowing standard, so the person would have to consciously be not telling the officer if someone was pulled over and they just forgot that they had a handgun in their back seat or something. So I assume the standard is knowing in this case?
Through the chair, this particular statute requires a knowing mens rea, whether or not your honest forgetfulness would qualify as knowingly. I believe it could and probably would. But it would certainly be a defense that you'd forgotten. That was something that could play out in the courts.
Senator Wilkowski?
One other one other question. Immediately, how do you know how the courts define immediately inform the peace officer? Would that be within, have they put like any sort of time frame, or is that just a reasonable standard?
Through the chair, I believe that's a reasonable standard under the circumstances, that there is not a specific time limit or other more specific time frame.
So just sort of playing it out, police officer comes to your window, says license, registration, insurance. Do you tell him at that moment? If a lot of times police officer goes back to their car, I mean, what if you didn't tell them at that moment when they were there, and then the officer went back to the car, and then they came back again and started to get suspicious? I mean, what have you had any cases? Well, I don't know if this term has been used anywhere else, but how do you think a court might interpret that?
Through the chair, I believe that, so courts would interpret this as if you were contacted, that one of the first few things you did in responding to the officer would be notifying them you had a weapon in the car, either before you were reaching for your license or registration or as you were doing it. If you were to wait, retrieve your license and registration, and then notify the officer, I think it would be an open question. But I think if you allowed the officer then to return to his vehicle and then came back and then notified him, I think that would be most probably a violation of the statute.
And that was, when I was reading it, that's what I figured is when contacted. So that would be like first contact would be my guess. So, but good questions. Maybe we can go to the Alaska State Troopers at this point and maybe find out what their protocol is under the present statute and how they might see this playing out. Jeff, are you online and can you hear us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Laughlin. I am I hold the rank of major with the Alaska State Troopers. I'm one of two deputy directors stationed up here in Anchorage. And I'm available for questions. I think that both Mr. Quinlan and the officer from General Police Department that gave testimony did a very eloquent and thorough job, but I certainly will answer any questions that you have, Mr. Chair.
So the question that I think we could just understand a little better is, at this point, under the law that we have now, if there is more than one person in a vehicle one of them fails to disclose, how is that treated, or do you ask them to disclose at this point?
Mr. Chairman, if I'm understanding your question, as the law stands now without the proposed bill in front of us, so if we're talking about the vehicle, so part of my understanding is the reason that we ask, we support this bill is because for concealed on a person, there's a requirement for that person carrying concealed to disclose to law enforcement when contacted. The same thing does not apply to the driver of a vehicle or the passengers in a vehicle when contacted by law enforcement. So as it stands right now, unless it's concealed on the driver's person or the passenger's person, there would be no obligation to disclose to law enforcement, and we would be supportive of that being a requirement. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
I think that helps. One of the questions that had come up as I was thinking about this is, within a vehicle, we say the interior of the vehicle, would it be hard to determine if you ask somebody to say, is a firearm within reach, over against, is it within the interior of the vehicle? Would that be more clarifying? Would that be helpful?
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you that in other areas of the law, that some of the terminology that's often used for folks in my profession, law enforcement professionals, are within lunge, reach, or grasp. And so I think somebody earlier testified that this probably may not apply to a trunk, for example.
Right.
I'm not an attorney, but that that definition is sort of within lunge, reach, or grasp is one of those definitions that officers frequently use when describing deadly weapons and their accessibility to somebody that law enforcement is in contact with. That very well could be helpful to Bell Sure.
Thank you very much. Also, is it now protocol to go ahead and ask when there's a contact made on a traffic stop, is it protocol at this point to ask if there is a firearm in the vehicle or on the person, probably on the person, to be because of the way the law is? Is that a protocol to ask at this point?
Mr. Chairman, within our agency, and of course everybody, officers obviously have a lot of discretion and sort of exercise their style as they develop their way through their careers. But generally speaking, using air quotes, the routine traffic stop. So let's say, for example, I stop a motorist for a tail light, a defective tail light, or fail to use a turn signal. Generally speaking, I won't ask about firearms or anything else in the vehicle unless for some reason, I've developed some sort of reasonable suspicion that there is something else going on. A lot of our officers are contacting motorists for general traffic infractions and don't necessarily ask those sorts of questions. In fact, you know, I just did this the other day. As a matter of fact, I commute between Wasilla and Anchorage, pulled over a motorist who was exceeding the speed limit, walked up to, and she was a female, by the way, a middle-aged female. Identified myself, told her the reason for the traffic stop, had no intention to ask her about firearms, and because she is a concealed carry permit holder, she immediately notified me that she indeed did have a firearm in her purse, and I thanked her for that, and we proceeded with the traffic stop. I gave her a warning and we moved on. Had she not disclosed that she had a firearm in her purse, I probably likely wouldn't have asked, because there was nothing that generated any sort of suspicion that this was anything other than a motorist who happened to be driving a little bit too fast for the posted speed limit. So a lot of that just depends on whether or not there's something else influencing the environment of the traffic stop that would cause us to be suspicious. There's other sort of behavior occurring, but not always, I guess, would be the short answer.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Other questions for Mr. Laughlin? Thanks for being part of our committee and answering questions. As you can see, it's pretty straightforward language, but it really gets into a variety of different areas. So what I'd like to do is lay the bill aside at this point. I'm going to consider a couple questions that I'll probably bounce off the sponsor. If there are other questions or parts that you'd like to consider on this, or maybe get the Department of Law to answer further questions, we'll bring the bill back up so that we can have that discussion. I think the idea of making sure that police have the best tools for safety is important, and that people are the most free they can be in a safe society. So both of those are tensions. But I can tell you the danger that the police have to deal with is so significant in our day and so fast and surprising that my heart goes out to him. So I appreciate the sponsor bringing this bill forward. I think it's something that we need to work on, and if we can fix up anything that has to have a question answered, then we should do that. Move it on. Any other questions at this point? With that, I'm going to lay Senate Bill 69 aside for further discussion at a later date. And anything else for the committee? Anybody want to talk about anything else? All right, we'll adjourn. And it looks like about 2:25. 2:20, I mean.